Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Scott Ritzheimer. He is the founder and CEO of Scale Architects. He's helped start nearly 20,000, that's 20 with a thousand, new businesses and nonprofits. And with his business partner, they've led their multi-million dollar business through an exceptional and extended growth phase, over 10 years of double digit growth. That's no joke. All before he turned 35. He founded Scale Architects to help businesses across the country identify the right growth strategies and find the right guides to get them on the fast track to predictable success and stay there as long as possible. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Kenny, so great to be here. I'm very excited about this conversation.
I am too. I'm jazzed up. And so we'll have to end up with like parts two and three. I'm already getting ideas based on our pre-show, but tell us, Scott, what has been on your mind lately?
What has been on my mind lately? The thing that consumes really all of what I do in terms of, you know, how I'm setting up my own business, how I help other coaches in their businesses, and ultimately how we help clients is really getting to this idea of when. I think when is the most important business decision or question, because there's so many things that, you know, you ask for advice and people will say it's this or it's this. And you and I have actually had this conversation. It's like, well, when are you, right? Like, because based on anything from, you know, where you are as a leader, where you are as a founder, where you are as an organization, if you misdiagnose the needs of right now, you're going to either over-rely on the wisdom of the past, right? Of the wisdom from the future from others. Mm. And so I think, you know, there's this whole sea of wonderful podcasts and great advice. And so much of it, when you really get down to it, is contradictory. It's kind of like if you try and stay away from everything that causes cancer, I'm pretty sure you'll die of starvation right before the cancer could ever get you. You know, it's kind of one of those things, like, because everything causes cancer, right? The sun causes cancer, and not having the sun causes cancer. So it's that version for me in the business world is when you look at advice of really, really smart people, there's so much advice that seems contradictory. Mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. we kind of see it as good leadership is static. It's always the same thing, or what you need to do as a leader is always the same thing. And because of that, I see a lot of leaders that are stuck without a way to really figure out, you know, who should I be listening to, including themselves.
That's great. That's, and I felt that the, you know, it's sort of like do everything all at once, right? And it's not that people are espousing bad advice or wisdom or anything like that, but it can lead to a lot of getting the cart before the horse. And so if you're doing something that's right, you know, I heard someone say this and it stuck with me, which is we tend to, you know, we idolize like a Steve Jobs or an Elon Musk or something like that. Well, even in what they've done for Steve and what currently doing for Musk, although certainly he's garnered a lot more controversy lately for his leadership, but they're leading very large scale businesses, right? You know, Apple at this point, you know, is I think maybe still the wealthiest or highest grossing company, most valuable, you know, passing the $1 trillion mark. But what they need to do for their business to succeed is very different than, say, what, you know, like a Main Street USA small business owner's got 5 employees or 10 or 15 or even 50, what they need to be doing. Is that sort of getting at the heart of it, is that we've gone out and we've looked at the $1 billion unicorn businesses and you're seeing that it's causing a lot of damage when people try to apply all those principles up there, when the vast majority of businesses in America are, you know, probably got 5 to 10 employees or, yeah. or, you know, certainly less than 500 or 5,000.
Absolutely, yeah, and it changes how you function organizationally, and we kind of get that. What we don't necessarily get is media in general, right? Kind of has these like super stories, and so what ends up happening between that and the great books from great leaders that you know that we listen to. We tend to kind of see a leadership book as being for all leaders at all times, right? And I'm not going to name any names, but there's wonderful people who write wonderful books that have had a massive impact on my life. But the reality of it is you've got to recognize, this is particularly true for, I'd say, founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, for a couple of reasons we can get into that, but it's true for all leaders as well, is you've got to recognize, is the advice that they're giving, or if it's a book or a podcast, is the audience that they're speaking to in the same part of the journey that you are?
Mm.
And if they're not, it doesn't mean you throw it away, but you have to take all of the advice with a pinch of salt and say, hey, are these the right strategies for right now? Because if you're, an owner, just launched a business, entrepreneur, trying to get the thing off the ground, trying to put money, enough money in the bank to hit payroll on Friday, what you're listening to, what you're focusing on, how you lead is completely different than if you're a founder, owner, still in a business that has been around for a while and is stable and is trying to scale or struggling with complexity, right? The way that you lead, the thing that you have to show up, the skills that are necessary change dramatically over time.
Gotcha. So if you were summing up like the prevailing wisdom of our day right now, how would you sum up that common wisdom? Like, is it something you've already said with the everything? All
yeah.
The
yeah. I think in general, yes. I think it's in general, it's that we assume that what makes a good leader is always the same thing. And so in assuming that, we think that if I'm speaking, if I have learned a leadership lesson, all leaders need to learn that lesson now. And it's a wonderfully heartfelt thing. It's very, very appropriate. But I would add the caveat to that everyone needs to learn it at the right time.
Yeah.
And what happens if we don't? There's two equal but opposite errors if we don't do this. One is we overvalue our own experience as leaders, and we overvalue what we learned in the past was right, and we fail to appreciate what in the present is needed.
Okay.
And the same thing happens when you're looking at advice coming in for those who are leaders or readers, right? Yeah. So for those who read a lot, who listen to a lot of podcasts, who are getting, or hearing from the experience of people that are much further down the road, the threat there is to overapply the lessons, if you will, from the future to today. And what that does is it just adds pressure. I work with so many, CEOs, founders who have just this enormous weight on their shoulder to be all of these different things: a visionary leader who's charismatic and leads the way. The ruthless finisher who's down there getting stuff done. The processor who understands like every last process in detail in Emyth, and the synergistic leader who like rallies everyone and makes them feel warm and cozy. And the reality of it is no one is all of those things, right? Especially not at any one given point in time. And at any one given point in time, there is a disproportionate return on a very select few things. Yeah. And if as leaders, we can start to cut through the noise, wonderful advice, right? True lessons from the past. If we can cut through that noise and find a way of recognizing where we are and what's needed today, that I think is where you start to see leaders who step into, disproportionate ROI on their effort to really coming alive in their current stage.
I see. Yeah. So you're not saying don't pay attention to things you've learned in the past and don't stop your learning of consuming things that are coming in, whether it's a book that's old that you've never read or just like new research that's becoming available. It's don't overvalue either side of that. It's a both and as opposed to an either or way of thinking. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's actually kind of helpful if we take the world of sports, right? I don't like to over rely on sports analogies because we lose some people, but hang with me. You don't have to be a sports czar to get this. But an example of this to just, you know, kind of make it funny is let's say you're a great, you know, football player in your day and you win titles and you move on, you become a coach. So now you're coach on the sideline of the field and you lead your team well, you get them to the championship game, right? And it's like go to, you're a soccer fan, so there's the soccer version of this, but we'll just run with a football one just for a moment. XFL's out. We'll do a pitch for, you know, indoor football. I don't know if it's going to work or not. I haven't watched a game, but
the Rock's a part of it, so it's got my wife.
It has to work. Okay, so your coach on the sideline, your team's there, you're down, you know, it's fourth quarter, the whole thing, right? You know, everything's ramped up. You're 3-yard line. You got to get to the end zone. You call the play, send it to the quarterback, huddle, everyone lines up. And what do you do at that point, right? You're not going to touch the ball at all. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, like the lessons you learned as a quarterback, you're looking out ready. Should you call an audible or not? Doesn't matter, right? How hard you throw the ball? Doesn't matter. Whether you get your snap count right, doesn't matter. All these skills that you prided yourself on and were essential when you were on the field, mm-hmm. they don't matter anymore on the sideline.
Right.
Right. So ball's hiked. It's supposed to be a fake, you know, and then a quarterback option. So, we fake the ball and the receiver misses the play. Like, I don't know if it's nerves. I don't know if, they thought it was actually run. They get faked out by their own play, right? So the receiver's blocking. It's horror of horrors. You know the ball's going to the back corner of the end zone. And so what does the coach do? They sprint. Dead sprint, fast as they possibly can, remembering all the glory days of their 0-40, right? And they're booking it. Just imagine this happening, right? NFL coach is flying down the sideline. All of a sudden, the cameras all move over. You know, the ball's going through the air, and somehow he catches it, right? Diving catch, nails it in the end zone. Just unreal, like ESPN's going bonkers, right? And so what's the coach do? Gets up, spikes the ball, does his dance, and it's what's the result? You know, it's silence. You can hear a pin drop in the stadium, right? Because everyone's like, what just happened, right? And the only thing that you see happening is there's these little flags that are flying at you from every direction, right? These little yellow flags, and there's a penalty. What? You know, 15 yards, you've lost the game. And you know, that's never happened in the history of professional football, right? Like, it's absurd when we think about it, but it's exactly what we do all the time inside of our businesses.
Wow.
And so if we think being a great leader, right, if we define leadership as the skills needed to be a great star player on the field, right, or mm-hmm. the captain on the field leading the team and calling audibles and running plays, or the coach on the sideline as opposed to the GM in the box, if we don't recognize these different roles, and they come in sequence, especially for founders, if we don't recognize the stage that we're in, the behaviors that are not only appropriate but necessary for that stage, we mm-hmm. start to undermine the folks around us. We start to focus on things that we can't move anymore. We focus on skills that aren't helpful anymore. Again, if you're a coach on the sideline, if you're a CEO of a business, it does not matter how fast you can run anymore. It doesn't matter. You know, I remember... who was it? They almost didn't draft him because his hands were too small, right? It doesn't matter how big your hands are anymore. Like, all the things that made you great at the earlier stage, so many of them are no longer relevant. And when we see leadership as being a static thing, right? Just greater expression of one thing, we miss out on how what we did in the past may have helped prepare us for, but is not the same as what we need to do today.
I see. So that sounds like you're making a call to self-awareness for this leader, because there's a progress. There's a, you know, as we were talking before, there's an evolution here. So how are these leaders supposed to figure out like where those transition points, because that's one of the beautiful and terrifying things about business, right? Is there aren't these delineated lines that perfectly correspond. It's not a video game. It's not when you get enough founder experience points, it's like, all right, now we're no longer a startup, we're a scale up, like, and you get a new badge and a title. It doesn't work like that. So what are you seeing, and how are you coaching the businesses, the leaders you're coming in contact with, or specifically founders, to recognize those moments when, hey, I went from, you know, I was the understudy, I broke out, I'm the quarterback, and now I'm high level quarterback, and now I'm transitioning, I'm an assistant coach, now I'm the head coach, and then at some point they moved to GM, president, whatever, if we're sticking with the sports metaphor, and they need different skills. They can be informed, like you said, of the past, but they need to use that as a reference point, but not necessarily be the one going and running to the end zone. So how are you helping those founders do that? Because they're just going mock Jesus with their hair on fire. As a friend of mine used to say, how do you help them?
It's a fascinating thing, because that's exactly right. Like, why, you know, if you're out there, you're running plays, you're throwing the ball, you don't have to think about anything else. And one of the things that the sports world does have is it's curated, right? It happens in discrete times. You age out of sports, right? It's a lot more concrete. There's a real scoreboard. There are real sidelines. And so what it does, it serves as a helpful illustration. And it's easy to recognize why it's so much, easier to recognize in sports. What do you do when you're off? Well, the first thing is, I think you have to understand that the boundaries in leadership are every bit as real as the sideline on a football game, right? And in understanding that, and understanding that there's a progression, I think you just have to recognize, one, that leadership isn't static. That's why that's such a big deal. If you think it's always the same, there's no reason to stop and think, well, is it fundamentally different? You might tailor it and tweak it over time. But most of the folks that I work with are stuck in around stage four of this process. So if we walk through a couple of stages just real quick. So the first one's the trainee, you know, on the sideline, or, you know, pre-launch. I call them the dissatisfied employee. You look at founders, you know, they're most founders for a few years from now are sitting somewhere miserable in a job, and they're thinking there's got to be a better way. And so there's a right way to do that and a wrong way to do that. The big thing that we do here is most of us take the leap too soon. We think as soon as we hit dissatisfied employee, entrepreneurism is wonderful, I'm going to go for it. And we miss the opportunities that are available as a trainee that you never get again. And that's a big deal. So we jump in the game, we're doing it. It's the startup entrepreneur, right? You're in the game, you're going for it. And the goal at that stage is to be the star player. When you look at, you know, someone in that startup entrepreneur mode, the highest ROI thing you can do for your company is to actually make you better at selling, make you better at delivering, make you better at whatever. It's not a time to invest in like a 9-day culture offsite, right? Like that's not, you're not going to get a big ROI on that.
Yeah.
But you're looking at how can you be better at doing whatever it is that you do, right? It's like being a star player on the field. Now, as that, you know, as you do that well, more people buy from you. You can't do it all yourself. And so what do? You start bringing in other people to work with you, right? Now, in business, we say like they work for you. But the reality of it is, in a small startup, they really do work with you. And it's like being a captain on the field, because there's a really unique challenge at this stage. And that is that you are still responsible for your stuff, right? Whether that's selling or doing or whatever, you're not just sitting back in some big posh management role. You're out there actually going and doing it. You have your deliverables each and every day, but you also have to make sure everyone else is doing what they're supposed to do. Because if your guy in front of you is not blocking, right? If your head of operations or your admin assistant doesn't do their job, you can't do yours.
Right.
And what happens at this stage, we get stuck. The biggest question, the way to find out if you're in this stage is if you find yourself daily saying, what's wrong with these people, right? You're probably in this third stage. I actually call it the reluctant manager, because founders don't found businesses 9 times out of 10. There's the exception, but 99 out of 100, I'd say, don't start businesses to manage people, right? Like that, you can, there are much, much easier ways to get into a management position. And so, and quite honestly, a lot of founders are not good at as managers. They are leaders, if you want to kind of slice it that way, which I don't really like. They don't understand how to lead as a manager. And okay. And so because of that, there's just this reluctance and resistance to being a manager, again, because we have people who are much further down the road who know that if you keep trying to be a manager and don't step out of that role and into leadership, it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
So you've got this reluctant manager, right? They're trying to coordinate a group of people around them, and there's things that they can do to succeed, but you know, they start getting more of the stuff in the right place. They keep selling. There's a bigger team. And what starts to happen, and this is something that System and Soul does really, really well, is it starts building a cadre of leaders around you, right? So they start to form into a leadership team. And using a structure like System and Soul is a fantastic way of speeding up this process and removing a lot of the really painful trial and error. And as you start doing that, what happens is you spend less and less time on the field, right? Even less and less time coordinating other people on the field. And that's where you start this move into stepping off the field, right? Into the coach position. System and Soul, you've got the visionary role, right? And as a visionary, your job's not to go out and do it anymore. But that's how you've built all your success up to this point. Right, is going out and doing it. And so if you don't recognize that the growth comes with not just more up and to the right, but a stage change for you as a leader, you get stuck undermining, going around, doing end runs, and interrupting the flow of business for your leaders. You start undermining your other captains. Does that make sense? Wow.
Yeah.
And so what happens there, and this is where we really move to coach on the sidelines. Now, that sounds like a wonderful thing. People hear that and they're like, that's great. I'd love to be on the sidelines. You know, I'm tired of running. But the reality of it is what it ends up leaving most visionaries as what I call the disillusioned leader. Mm-hmm. Because they're just wondering, like, what do I do with my, it's like Ricky Bobby, you know what I mean? Like, what do I do with my hands? You know, and we just don't know what to do with ourselves. And so we're jumping into the play and making the diving catch and showing everyone how wonderful we are. When the reality of it is we need to be leading leaders. And that's not, it's not a part-time job, right? It's one of the things, like, coaching is not a part-time. Just because you're not in the play doesn't mean that you aren't there full-time doing the work. Right. And so you get these disillusioned leaders who kind of vacillate between, you know, I'm out, send me a check, right? Like these guys can do, I come in here and I screw everything up. And so, you know, just get me out of the way. And if we're not careful, that's what some systems can do is make everything work so well that the visionary becomes a problem that just kind of gets ejected from the company. And that's fine. Right. If your goal is to have, you know, freedom of lifestyle choices and that's what you genuinely want, that's great. But the reality of it is that being that head coach, being that leader and that fourth stage, it's a full-time job. And this is where we're really looking at, can you build what I would call a scalable company? Can you build not just a leadership team, but an executive team, right? Can we build a group of people that can not only lead themselves, but they can lead leaders as well? And again, that's a full-time job.
That's fantastic. And it makes a lot of sense. And I've definitely witnessed that in my work with System and Soul, and talking to people is that visionary starts feeling like, well, am I being put out to pasture? What am I doing? You know, because it's tough. When I think of like football and star player and not knowing what to do, and you keep reflecting on what you were able to do, is like Uncle Rico on, Napoleon Dynamite. It's like they say I'm living too much in the 82, you know, sort of thing. And I used to be able to throw a pigskin quarter mile. Like, you're that's what you are. You're just a visionary kind of floating around telling people what you used to be able to do. Now, you said something really interesting that I've not really heard a distinction made before is between like a senior leadership team and an executive team. Do you see those things as interchangeable? Because it sounds like you see those as different, like one's a starting spot and one's sort of a growth spot. You
know, they're like a natural progression. I will definitely not say one is better than the other. I would say they are both more appropriate for a given stage, right? So if you've got three people and you introduce me to your executive team, like your second hires your your COO and your third hires your CFO, right? Like you can call it whatever you want. So this is not semantics in the sense of like call whatever team whatever you want to call it. I don't care. You can call them the, you know, we used to joke about titles, you know, other high ecclesiastical dignitary. I don't care what you call them, right? Like that's not what we're talking about here, but when the difference between a leadership team and an executive team, there's a few new, traits that I'll call them. One, a leadership team is there to get the most out of you as the CEO. They're essentially in the best version of this word. It's got a very negative connotation. I don't mean it that way, but they are enablers, right? You're getting people to go and execute on your ideas. You're looking for folks who say yes very quickly, who walk through breeze block walls to make it happen, and who know the least needed to know to keep everyone underneath them in line, right? These are folks who are generally biased to action, we like to say. They're doers, quintessentially. And in general, what you're doing is when you're that captain on the field, right, you're just looking for other people who can protect your blind side. You're looking for other people who excel in these different areas, but you're not genuinely looking for other people who are going to lead the whole organization forward. And that's where we start to move toward executives. And another nuance is I think that executives' job is to say no at the right time, and leaders' jobs are to find a way to yes.
And by saying no, you're saying no to that visionary leader founder.
Yes.
And you would see that as a team, because even within System and Soul and some other frameworks, that's really that second in command, you know, for us as an operator.
Yes.
With System and Soul, is that sort of gets delegated to one person. But it sounds like in an executive team, everybody participates in the timely opposition.
Yes.
Basically.
The leadership team, the precursor to an executive team actually is not a leadership team. It's usually that number one, number two combo. What we're actually doing is expanding the 1-2 combo to a team, right? And then what you tend to find is the folks who are great leadership team members, they tend to be what we call T2 or Tori 2. They tend to be the senior managers, right? Or a leadership team under a senior leadership team. There's all kinds of different names for them, but they tend to be that rung of folks who sit on the dividing line between doing and deciding, right? That's a skill set that's very different than executives. You know, the majority of their stock comes from their ability to contribute to high quality decisions for the organization.
I see.
And so what you'll see is that the combination of that visionary operator combination, that's actually the precursor to an executive team. And what you're doing is you might be inviting other people up. You might be hiring people in. There's all kinds of different ways of doing that. But as you start to hit, the fourth and fifth stages of your own evolution as a founder, you find yourself needing a higher level of leader who engages in a very, very different way, right? It's like having a coaching staff versus your captains and their alternate captains.
Right. Something's coming to mind, and I'm curious of your take on it, is because we've been talking about timing, if say a visionary founder hires someone who is maybe a bit more wired, because I think also individuals can be like, you kind of have to get the timing right between people, and in System and Soul, we do that with the fit, FIT. Is it right for the company, right for the individual? But if a company really needs enablers, right, in that to make a leadership team, but they hire someone who is more they think more executively, right? In doing that, it's not that the company was wrong or the person was wrong. It was the wrong timing, but they can end up doing damage to each other. Is that
Yeah, we'll switch to vehicles. We'll use another analogy. We'll get away from sports for a second. It's kind of like strapping in and pick the different types, because there's different types of executives. Not all executives look the same. There's actually four very different types of executives. But it's like going in and strapping a Formula One engine to a bicycle, right? Like that's going to tear the thing to pieces. Or more commonly, it's going and adding the brakes, right, from a freight train to your bicycle. You know, like you can't move the thing. And so, yes, I see this happen a lot. And there's a particular way that it happens. We tend to look for very visionary people that we call executives. We mistake being visionary and being an executive. We treat those as synonymous. They are not. And so you'll get these teams of really high caliber, you know, leaders. You know, it's basically seven visionaries in a room, and they can't even get out of the first stage because everyone has an idea. There's too many chiefs in the, you know, too many chiefs. Yeah. There's too many chefs in the kitchen, whichever analogy you want to use there. And so, yes, it's very much about, you know, right people, right seats, right? But right people, right seats right now. And again, it's this whole question of when is it the right time to bring these people in? When's it the right time to elevate these people up?
Yeah, that's really good. Well, Scott, I'm sure we could keep going on. There's like seven different rabbit holes that I would love to take us down, but we'd probably start losing people because this is not the Joe Rogan show and I can't go on for 2.5 hours. But as someone is listening to this, and especially if they're an owner, founder, visionary, they're hearing all this like, okay, there are stages, like don't rely on this versus that. You know, there's a lot of great information that they just took in. But what would you tell that founder, that owner, as a first step, something that they could do within, say, the next 24 hours to start down that journey? They don't have to take all of your advice all at once, kind of going back to the beginning of our conversation. Where do they get started, and something that they could do in the next day?
Yeah. I think you got to start to get on top of your when, right? And so one of the things that I did to help folks with this, I put together an ebook called The Founder's Evolution that walks through all seven stages, and it hits key points on each one. So you can read the first chapter usually and figure out what you are, and then you can just go straight to that chapter if you want to. I'd recommend at some point going back and reading through it, because they do accumulate and there's skills that are needed. But very first thing I would do is say, grab a hold of that. And then there's a few other places that when shows up, and so scalearchitects.com, we've got all kinds of free assessments and content that'll help do that. But I would say, especially based on this conversation, number one thing is identify what stage you're in as a founder or a leader. And the easiest way to do that is to grab a copy of that ebook. It's free.
Gotcha. And they can find that at Scale Architects, or
So if you go to Scale Architects. .com/founders, scalearchitects.com/founders, and you'll have an option to download it there.
Gotcha. And so for everybody listening, if you're not watching, or even if you are watching, like I'll have the link to that in the show notes. Scott, if somebody wants to know more about you, your work with Scale Architects, or anything else, apart from scalearchitects.com, where would you direct them to, you know, get in touch with you, ask questions, or just follow the content you're producing?
Yeah, I have to, apart from, because we've specifically designed scalearchitects.com to answer that question, but we take that off. I'm all over social media. This ends up being an unnecessarily complex question because you wouldn't imagine that there's a whole lot of Scott Ritzheimers out there, but I'm a junior. So look for the guy who looks like he's like 14. That's me. And you'll pick the right account. We just put out an enormous amount of content. One of the things that a project of mine that's been a lot of fun, I launched a podcast like this called Secrets of the High Demand Coach, where I bring in just some of the top coaches around the world and ask them for their best advice. And we run it through some of these filters on when and time and everything. So you'll find that there. You'll find a bunch of assessments there. It's all over the place on social media. So if you look for Scott Ritzheimer, you look for Scale Architects, you will find us very quickly.
Excellent. And I cannot recommend the podcast enough. So there's several episodes that I've had to message Scott. I was like, this just blew me away. Like, this was awesome. So don't miss out. And as he mentioned, there's also some free assessments and things at his website. Well, Scott, thanks so much for coming on. And hopefully we can have another conversation like this in the future.
Absolutely. Kenny, it was my pleasure.
All right. Thanks, man.